The Carastion. For Russell Sargent, who invented it. The small caste of the tanners was a sacred one. To eat food prepared by a tanner would entail a year's purification to a tinker or a sculptor, and even low-power castes, such as the traders, had to be cleansed by a knight's ablutions after dealing for leather goods. Chumo had been a tanner since she was 5 years old, and had heard the willows whisper all night long at the singing sands. She had had her proving day, and since then had worn a tanner's madder red and blue shirt and doublet, woven of linen on a willowwood loom. She had made her masterpiece, and since then had worn the master tanner's neckband of dried vortituber, incised with a double line and double circles. So clothed and so ornamented, she stood among the willows by the burying ground, waiting for the funeral procession of her brother, who had broken the law and betrayed his caste. She stood erect and silent, gazing towards the village by the river and listening for the drum. She did not think. She did not want to think. But she saw her brother, Quatewa, in the reeds down by the river, running ahead of her, a little boy too young to have caste, too young to be polluted by the sacred. A crazy little boy, pouncing on her out of the tall reeds, shouting, "I'm a mountain lion!" A serious little boy watching the river run, asking, "Does it ever stop? Why can't it stop running, Chumo?" A 5-year-old coming back from the singing sands, coming straight to her, bringing her the joy, the crazy, serious joy that shone in his round face. "Chumo, I heard the sand singing. I heard it. I have to be a sculptor, Chumo." She had stood still. She had not held out her arms, and he had checked his run towards her and stood still, the light going out of his face. She was only his womb sister. He would have 2 sibs now. He and she were of different castes. They would not touch again. 10 years after that day, she had come with most of the townsfolk to Quatewa's proving day, to see the sand sculpture he had made in the great plain place, where the sculptors performed their art. Not a breath of wind had yet rounded off the keen edges or leveled the lovely curves of the classic form he had executed with such verve and sureness, the body of Amakumo. She saw admiration and envy in the faces of his true brothers and true sisters. Standing aside among the sacred castes, she heard the speaker of the sculptors dedicate Quatewa's proving piece to Amakumo. As his voice ceased, a wind came out of the desert north, Amakumo's wind, the maker hungry for the maid, Amakumo the mother, eating her body, eating herself. Even while they watched, the wind destroyed Quatewa's sculpture. Soon there was only a shapeless lump and a feathering of white sand blown across the proving ground. Beauty had gone back to the mother. That the sculpture had been destroyed so soon and so utterly was a great honor to the maker. The funeral procession was approaching. She heard, or imagined she heard, the drum beat, soft, no more than a heartbeat. Her own proving piece had been the traditional one for tanner women, a drumhead. Not a funeral drum, but a dancing drum, loud, gaudy with red paint and tassels. "Your drumhead, your maidenhead," her true brothers called it, and made fierce, teasing jokes. But they couldn't make her blush. Tanners had no business blushing. They were outside shame. It had been an excellent drum, chosen at once from the proving ground by an old musician, who had played it so much she soon wore off the bright paint and lost the red tassels. But the drumhead lasted through the winter, and till the rapi ceremony, when it finally split wide open during the drumming for the all-night dancing under the moons, when Chumo and Karwa first twined their wrist plates. Chumo had been proud all winter when she heard the voice of her drum loud and clear across the dancing ground. She had been proud when it split and gave itself to the mother. But that had been nothing to the pride she had felt in Quatewa's sculptures. For if the work be well done, and the thing made be powerful, it belongs to the mother. She will desire it. She will not wait for it to give itself, but will take it. So the child dying young is called the mother's child. Beauty, the most sacred of all things, is hers. The body of the mother is the most beautiful of all things. So all that is made in the likeness of the mother is made in sand. To keep your work, to try to keep it for yourself, to take her body from her, Quatua, how could you? How could you, my brother? Her heart said. But she put the question back into the silence and stood silent among the willows, the trees sacred to her caste, watching the funeral procession come between the flax fields. It was his shame, not hers. What was shame to a tanner? It was pride, she felt, pride. For that was her masterpiece that Dastuye the musician held now and raised to his lips as he walked before the procession, guiding the new ghost to its body's grave. She had made that instrument, the Karastian, the flute that is played only at a funeral. The Karastian is made of leather, and the leather is tanned human skin, and the skin is that of the womb mother or the foremother of the dead. When Wekuri, womb mother of Chumo and Quatua, had died 2 winters ago, Chumo the tanner had claimed her privilege. There had been an old, old Karastian to play at Wekuri's funeral, handed down from her grandmother's. But the musician, when he had finished playing it, laid it on the mats that wrapped Wekuri in the open grave. For the night before, Chumo had flayed the left arm of the body, singing the songs of power of her caste as she worked, the songs that asked the dead mother to put her voice, her song, into the instrument. She had kept and cured the piece of rawhide, rubbing it with the secret cures, wrapping it round a clay cylinder to harden, wetting it, oiling it, forming it and refining its form, till the clay went to powder and was knocked from the tube, which she then cleaned and rubbed and oiled and finished. It was a privilege which only the most powerful, the most truly shameless of the tanners took, to make a Karastian of the mother's skin. Chumo had claimed it without fear or doubt. As she worked, she had many times pictured the musician leading the procession, playing the flute, guiding her own spirit to its grave. She had wondered which of the musicians it might be, and who would follow her, walking in her funeral procession. Never once had she thought that it would be played for Quatua before it was played for her. How was she to think of him, so much younger, dying first? He had killed himself out of shame. He had cut his wrist veins with one of the tools he had made to cut stone. His death itself was no shame, since there had been nothing for him to do but die. There was no fine, no ablution, no purification for what he had done. Shepherds had found the cave where he had kept the stones, great marble pieces from the cave walls, carved into copies of his own sand sculptures, his own sacred work for the solstice and the Hariba. Sculptures of stone, abominable, durable, desecrations of the body of the mother. People of his caste had destroyed the things with hammers, beaten them to dust and sand, swept the sand down into the river. She had thought Quatua would follow them, but he had gone to the cave at night and taken the sharp tool and cut his wrists and let his blood run. Why can't it stop running, Chumo? The musician had come abreast of her now, as she stood among the willows by the burying ground. Dastuye was old and skillful. His slow dance walk seemed to float him above the ground in rhythm with the soft heartbeat of the drum that followed. Guiding the spirit and the body on its litter, borne by 4 castless men, he played the Karastian. His lips lay light on the leather mouthpiece. His fingers moved lightly as he played, and there was no sound at all. The Karastian flute has no stops, and both its ends are plugged with discs of bronze. Tunes played on it are not heard by living ears. Chumo, listening, heard the drum and the whisper of the north wind in the willow leaves. Only Quatua, in his woven grass shroud on the litter, heard what song the musician played for him, and knew whether it was a song of shame, or of grief, or of welcome.